Good afternoon. Sorry you have me and not everybody else. So I'm going to be covering most of the content that we had planned to discuss in the session, and then Catherine will be talking about some specifics, specific work that the coalition's been working on related to our new immunization school law and then some of the other activities they've been working on. So I'm Kathleen Winter. I'm an epidemiologist with the California Department of Public Health. I'm the main epidemiologist working on pertussis specifically, so I have a lot of this content I'm very familiar with. We've been talking about pertussis nonstop for the past year. And if you aren't sick of it yet after this talk, we do have yet another session tomorrow to talk about more of the epidemiology of what we saw. And CDC is going to be talking about the new ACIP recommendations. So that's tomorrow, I think, at 2. Does that sound right? So if you need more information or want to hear more, you can do that tomorrow. So I'm not going to cover a lot of that today, just so that I don't steal my own thunder tomorrow. So today I'm going to just do a very brief background on pertussis and the epidemic, talk about the policy response in California, our programmatic response, and the communication activities that we put out, and then the ongoing efforts we have now with continued activity and with AB 354, our new school mandate. As we know, pertussis is cyclical. Our last peak in California was in 2005. We all know that infants are most vulnerable to severe complications, including death, and that immunity wanes. It's not lifelong. It wanes somewhere between 4 and 12 years after vaccination and maybe 4 to 20 years after natural disease. And the first vaccine, Tdap, for adolescents and adults was licensed in 2005, but uptake has been poor. National estimates put uptake among adults at 6%. In the last session, if anyone was there, you heard in San Diego, it looks like it might be a bit higher, somewhere around 30%, so that's encouraging. But California adolescents, coverage is similar to what we see in most other states. It's around 53%. Several studies have looked at the source of infection for infants, and it's most often the mother, but other family members are often a common source of pertussis. So we had a lot of cases in California in 2010. This graph just shows the overall epi curve for the year, and we were first alerted that something was going on right around March, April. We received communication from one of the children's hospitals, the one in Central Valley, and they service a lot of different counties in the Central Valley. And they alerted us saying, we're seeing a lot of babies being hospitalized, and we'd already had one infant die at that point in LA. So we were concerned, and we put out some feelers to some of the other counties and children's hospitals, and sure enough, people were reporting increases all over the state. So in early April, we started to get the communications out, and you can see that probably is why we saw so many cases coming in, because people were looking for it, and you know, we had the media following the epidemic very closely. So that's partly why we had so many reports coming through. And just briefly looking at who's affected most, as is seen nationwide, children under the age of 1 have the highest incidence. And then we had a spike at age 10 years. So in adolescence, it increased until you get to 10 and then decreased. And as you know, Tdap is recommended at age 11. So in looking at all of the cases that we were faced with, we really needed to prioritize efforts. And we realized early on we were not going to stop widespread transmission of the disease in California. So we had to focus our efforts at preventing infant deaths. So that really helped us shape all of our policies, all of our communication decisions. We needed to really emphasize that infants were the whole point of this vaccination program. And although we want to reduce morbidity across the state, we want to reduce morbidity in adults, our goal is to prevent infants from dying and infants from being hospitalized. So that was our key message. And even though we knew that adults needed vaccination, we wanted to target all of our vaccination efforts into those that had contact with young infants. So you all are familiar with this quote, to retain respect for sausages and laws, one must not watch them in the making. And I think this probably also applies to immunization policies. So here's an example of one of our press releases that we put out. We realized that we were having some issues with some of the current ACIP guidelines that were out, and there were a few gaps and implementation barriers that we were faced with. There is currently no pertussis vaccine licensed in the U.S. for children aged 7 and 9 years of age. And there are recommendations around pertussis vaccination in pregnancy, or there's not contraindications, but there's lack of recommendations from ACIP, AAP, and ACOG, and they differ, and they're confusing that there's not that harmonization there. There's this unclear minimum interval that's sort of recommended between TD and Tdap, but there's kind of loose recommendations for 2 years in the old recommendations. And there was no vaccine recommended for adults over the age of 64, since there is no vaccine licensed in the U.S. for that age group. So what we did in July of 2010 is we set forth our own state guidelines for vaccination. And this was really unprecedented for the California Department of Public Health. We had not done this in the past, and it was a monumental effort, and we needed a lot of support from CDC to put this through, and we are proud that we were able to do it. And what we did is recommend the Tdap booster for all adolescents down to age 10 years of age. And I'm just going to go back to that slide quickly. You can see why we wanted to move that booster down a year, because it certainly made sense with what we were seeing in our epi. We wanted to recommend vaccination for all women of childbearing age, regardless of whether or not they were pregnant. So preferably they would be vaccinated before pregnancy, but if not, they could be vaccinated during pregnancy or immediately after pregnancy in the postpartum period. We recommended that under-immunized children aged 7 and 9 years of age should be given a single dose of Tdap. And we wanted to administer Tdap to adults 65 years of age or older, especially those that had contact with young infants. We know that lots of caregivers or grandparents or other older adults that may be around young babies, and there was no vaccine recommended for those people. And we emphasized that there was no minimum interval that was needed between your previous TD or tetanus toxoid and Tdap. And it was okay to vaccinate somebody who had an unknown vaccination history. And that's where a lot of cocooning programs seem to break down, because many people don't know when their last Tdap was or TD, and so that's where it was just not given. So the logistical approval process for this was complicated and long, but our recommendations were based on the existing recommendations by several different medical groups. We also looked at published and unpublished data put out in the U.S. and from other countries, such as Canada. And we received support letters from AAP, from Kaiser, a large HMO in California, and from the California Academy of Family Physicians. We received input from our key advisors on the California Immunization Committee, and this is a group of physicians and laboratorians, infectious disease docs, and pediatricians throughout the state of California that do offer guidance to our immunization program. And this was reviewed by our CDPH lawyers. And we also spoke with the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program about the off-label use of Tdap. And they confirmed that whether or not a vaccine is given within the licensed ages or whether it's given off-label doesn't pertain to its ability to be reviewed by the committee if somebody is injured or has some sort of injury claim following immunization. So that was also reassuring to us. So the programmatic response, I'll go into that next. In April of 2010, we surveyed our birthing hospitals to find out who had a policy to do postpartum Tdap vaccination. Up to this point, we had not been doing a lot of statewide outreach in this area, so we were deficit in that. And if you went to the session earlier, you would have heard about Nevada. They're doing cocooning in all of their birthing hospitals, so it's a really wonderful effort. And if you have questions about cocooning, you should contact them.
I don't even know what that means.
Cocooning? Cocooning is when you're vaccinating around the infant. So the infant doesn't get the first dose of vaccine until 2 months of age. So you want to vaccinate mom, dad, everyone around the baby to be sure that they're protected from transmission. So in California, we have 256 birthing hospitals, and our birth cohort is 550,000 infants. So it's a tremendous effort to consider cocooning in a state like California. And when we surveyed infection preventionists and labor and delivery managers in April, we found out that only 31% of facilities currently had a policy to do postpartum vaccination, or they were in the process of implementing such a policy. And only 38% of facilities that had an ER were offering Tdap for wound management. 11% of facilities with a NICU had a policy to offer vaccine to parents or siblings of NICU patients. And only 26% were offering Tdap to their healthcare workers. And that was especially concerning because starting in September of last year, a new requirement under California's OSHA called the Aerosol Transmissible Diseases Standard went into effect. And this requires that facilities such as hospitals or other licensed medical facilities, that they offer Tdap vaccine in addition to MMR and varicella and flu vaccine seasonally to all of their employees that may have contact with patients. And so in April, only 26% currently had this policy, and we needed to have 100% compliance by September. So we knew there was still a lot of work to be done. And, of course, some of the barriers that were mentioned are things that I'm sure you're familiar with. The cost of the vaccine is high. It's difficult to be reimbursed. There's issues with offering reimbursement for Tdap for wound management versus TD, because Tdap is considered the Cadillac vaccine. It's not needed for wound management. There's physician and staff resistance and misunderstanding. And it's difficult to determine who is eligible for the vaccine, and often people don't know their vaccination histories. So we were able to obtain vaccine through the ERA program. So we used ERA funding to purchase free vaccine that we could distribute to birthing hospitals throughout the state in order to establish these cocooning programs. So we opened it first to birth hospitals, and we said, vaccinate all new mothers, and if you can do the dads or do other caregivers, go right ahead. We'll give you the vaccine for that. And then we extended the program to community health centers and tribal clinics in July. And we did not put any age restrictions on the vaccine or any insurance limitations. It was just simply free vaccine that could be given to anyone who was a caregiver of a young baby. And in total, we had 180 hospitals enroll in the program, and over 71,000 doses of vaccine were administered. Most facilities were only able to vaccinate the mother, but some did work up mechanisms to vaccinate other family members, either by giving it there in the hospital room or by having them referred to go to a clinic that was attached to the facility. We also had 525 community health centers enroll, and they distributed over 100,000 doses. The program, unfortunately, had to end at the end of the year just due to funding limitations, and we're conducting a follow-up survey to see how many facilities have been able to continue this program. Now that overhead has been done, you've got the nurses trained, the systems in place to offer the vaccine. We're hoping that maybe some facilities can still continue providing vaccine. We also were able to contract with a health care services company to do some on-site immunization clinics. And this is one of those mass vaccinator companies that often work for flu vaccine. And they were able to target some clinics to try to get people who may have contact with young infants. So to date, we have distributed approximately 51,000 doses through this organization in 27 local health departments. And the clinic locations have been varied, including things like farmers markets and fairs. And we've also been posting ongoing updated information on our state website on when all local health departments are running their clinics, what the times and dates of the clinics are, what the cost of the vaccine is, if there is any. So that's been helpful to have a one-stop shop for that. So we've had a vast majority of our work gone into our communication efforts. So language is everything, and when we called this an epidemic, it really got people to wake up. And so I think that was key to getting the messages out there and getting people interested in what was happening in California. In total, we put out 5 press releases in both English and Spanish. We held 2 media briefings. We participated in a CDC radio media tour that was on the epidemic. And we proactively worked with local, state, and national news media to develop these enterprise stories on pertussis. From April through September, the California Department of Health responded to around 70 media calls a month. And as a result, hundreds of stories about pertussis have been identified on websites and blogs that have come out of those calls. And also, this just represents what happened at the state level. At the local level, there were also similar phone calls set up, or hotlines set up, lots of media press releases and briefings that were also held. We held weekly calls with our local health departments to keep people on the same page and up to date on what was going on. We updated our data weekly and kept that posted on our website. And we initiated discussions with CDC and PAHO regarding pertussis activities along the border. We also sent a letter to that came from the California Hospital Licensing and Certification Branch to all medical facilities regarding the epidemic and also our Tdap recommendations. In terms of trying to reach out specifically to providers, we worked with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid to put out a letter detailing the Tdap recommendations and explicitly stating that Tdap is a covered drug for patients 65 and over, and that it can be obtained from a network pharmacy. And we wanted to emphasize the recommendations around Tdap vaccination for healthcare personnel, especially those with contact to young infants, and that Tdap should be used for wound management instead of TD, and that it can be used in those that are age 7 and older. And we sent out communications. We have a number of provider listservs. Some of those were established during H1N1, and so we were lucky to already have those systems in place. We sent out information through our Medi-Cal health plans, our provider organizations, pharmacies, and then through all the licensing and certification communications. Here's an example of some of our materials. Our key messages to providers were about the clinical recognition of pertussis, about appropriate specimen collection and laboratory testing, treatment recommendations, and the vaccine recommendations, of course. And this example here from AAP, this actually was prepared by Dr. Jim Cherry, and we were lucky to have him in California to support us on this. And this is specific guidelines that we helped put out on how to treat pertussis in a young infant. And this was important to be able to refer acute care hospitals to. And this is another example of something that could go directly to clinicians about thinking about pertussis, testing for pertussis, and of course, treatment. We were also able to put together a webinar held by Dr. Mark Sawyer, and he's a pediatrician down at University of California, San Diego, and luckily he's also on our immunization committee, and he's on CSDE, and he's an expert in pertussis. You may have heard him talk earlier today. And this is actually a webinar that's been archived on our website, so you can access this. It's targeted for clinicians, and it's about recognizing pertussis, testing for pertussis, treating pertussis. It's well done, and there's some great questions on there. And all of our materials are posted on our website. You can download them, print them. We're happy to share everything we've done. If you need more information, just get a hold of us, and we'll give you whatever you need. Our messages to the public were just general vaccination, but also, of course, about cocooning, recognizing pertussis signs and symptoms, and, of course, that infants are at greatest risk. And we did have materials put out in several different languages. We also targeted materials towards pregnant women. And we reached out to some communities that are a little bit harder to get to. Luckily, we were able to hold 3 ethnic media roundtables, and these are for African American, Asian, Latino, and Middle Eastern broadcast and print media, and they come together and have these sort of informal media press conferences to really discuss the issue and discuss how it impacts some of these smaller communities. And even though some of these organizations might only have, readership of in the hundreds, it's the main source of information for some people in these hard-to-reach communities. So it was great to be able to reach out to them. These pictures are actually from one of the media roundtables that we held. This is Dr. Eileen Yamada, who couldn't be here today to talk about all of our efforts. And this over here is Mariah Bianchi, and we're lucky to have her in California. She's actually an acute care nurse, and her son died of pertussis during the 2005 outbreak. And she's an advocate and is willing to talk about pertussis and share her story. And in this photo, she's actually sharing her story in Spanish, and which was a great thing to broadcast with to reach out to our Hispanic community. We organized interviews with Spanish language broadcast and also with print media. So our ongoing efforts, we're not quite there yet. We're on the road, but still have a lot of work to do. So AB354, Catherine's going to talk more in depth about AB354 and what this means for us. But briefly, this was passed by the California legislature in September of 2010. And what it is it's a pertussis booster requirement for all students in 7th through 12th grade. And I think this is probably unprecedented that any state has done this. So instead of just doing a one-year school entry requirement, for this next school year, it will affect 7th through 12th grade. So this is approximately 3 million students. And if you remember from an earlier slide, our Tdap coverage was at 53%. So that's a lot of kids that still need to get vaccinated. So in future years, it will just be a single-year requirement. Only 7th graders will need to have the vaccination. So we've been working on communications for this, obviously getting information out to the public and to schools. We've established a new website, theshopsforschool.org, which we're hoping is sort of a one-stop shop for this, for all TDAP requirement information. And we've sent out letters to providers and also a joint letter with the California Department of Education sent out to schools. So I'm going to stop there since I know Catherine's going to talk more about this issue specifically.